Ladies and gentlemen, we here at Hey Kids Comics have a very special announcement for you. If you can hear our voices,
that's both of us.
That's both. That's Jedi Cole and Andrew Farmer here at Hey Kids Comics. Then you can also see our faces.
Yes, at last. If you haven't had enough of seeing my face on the Rancor Pit live, why, what's this?
Now you can see both of our faces from Hey Kids Comics live, starting September 13th. From 11:30 to 12:30 Central at deepelemonair.com, we're going to be coming to you live with Hey Kids Comics.
Absolutely. Second Saturday of every month forever.
Expect the same asshattery that you're getting here now, plus your standard fare of guests, and a whole lot of fun. So
that's Cole, special new features that we just can't bring you on an audio show.
That's true.
Unless you just wanted to listen to us describe things.
And it's a much longer show. It's a much longer show that way. So, Cole, tell them how they can get in touch with us if they want to be able to be a part of this show.
Do you live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and want to be a part of Hey Kids Comics Live?
Hey Kids Comics Live!
Hey Kids Comics Live! So, if you want to be part of the show, write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com and let us know that you want to be on the show. Just put Hey Kids Comics Live, or for those pressed for time, HKC exclamation point live.
Remember the phrase that pays, it's Hey Kids Comics Live. And we will make sure that we get your question or comment into the show. You can also write us or call us on air. We're going to give you all that information coming up on Facebook and on Twitter, and as we get it on the show itself. So stay tuned for your regularly scheduled Hey Kids Comics and more info on this as it develops. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I am, of course, your host, Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, the Jedi, Cole Houston.
I am the pain of the last issue, last two issues, having to relive some nightmares.
It hurts on the inside. Viking Commando hurts on the inside a little bit.
Viking Commando hurts in many ways, in many places.
Don't try to pass Viking Commando.
Show me on Viking Commando where it hurts.
Show me on Jack Kirby's Fourth World where they hurt you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So as you just heard, HKC, Hey Kids Comics, is going to be coming to you live as of September 13th. Just wanted to make mention of that. More information coming on that. I'm sure we'll be including things in posts and putting things on Facebook, so just keep your eyes peeled for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a developing situation.
It's developing quickly.
We will definitely keep you informed here.
Yes. But moving on from there, will you find us hip deep in the middle of a story
arc?
We
are mired in a just a sucking swamp of
a quagmire of a story arc. That story arc being what, Cole?
This is a challenge of the super fails.
Imagine the stars flying by you.
Again,
and this issue is called Journey into Misery, and this is an issue Cole and I discuss this topic frequently in our off hours when we're sitting around at the gentleman's club drinking scotch and
our snifters of brandy and our large cigars,
our fine cognacs.
And we're surrounded by walls replete with bookshelves full of books that no one has ever cracked open in the history of the club. But they're there for ambiance.
All the Nancy Drew books are there. That was a Birdcage homage. Robin Williams, God rest his soul.
What they read.
Oh, you've got the whole Nancy Drew collection. So the issue tonight is all about bad writers and bad artists and writers and artists that have taken a turn for the worst and bad ideas and bad editors and those things that you see that you're just like, why? Why are you trying to hurt me with this book that I came to love so hardcore? So this one was definitely Cole's idea. So I'm going to let Cole go further into this.
Yes, I really, you know, with the whole arc, I thought, as we may have stated before, the, you know, we celebrate a lot of comics, but this is our chance to really actively both blast and celebrate the worst that comics have ever brought us. And in this issue, it really was all over the map. The more I was thinking about the different things I wanted to do, there was no containing all of the possibilities that Journey into Misery allowed. And I did have much, just so much fun coming up with the titles on this to try to find existing comic titles that would fit beautifully this theme. And, you know, where do you begin when you're looking at, where do you start? You know, every journey into misery starts at some terrible point, like, you know, stepping on what you thought was gum, and it turns out to be gum and cow manure mixed into some sort of strange, and then packaged.
What happened to you? What made it hurt so bad? I don't know.
I think one of the things that did, because we talked a little bit in the last issue about how there were these, you know, situations both at Marvel and DC where you had a series of titles purpose-built to introduce new characters, annuals that were served no other purpose really than to just fart a new character into existence.
Right.
En masse. But this was not, this was the first time it had ever been taken that kind of very slow and ordered approach.
Right.
There was a time over at Marvel where it took a little bit different turn, and that would be the Contest of Champions.
Oh, there's not enough beer in my bottle to suffer through the big blue-headed Grandmaster and his Contest of Champions.
Yeah, there was a hypothyroid Guardian of the Universe.
John Merrick decided that... no Elephant Man jokes.
He was the tallest of his kind, so he was cast out from the Green Lantern Corps and had to go live in the none other than N'Dwi Gast, the most unfortunate name in all of the elders of the universe, who all the rest of them have kind of like sexy, you know, Eurasian kind of porn
right.
names. He unfortunately has something that you say while you're vomiting.
You're trying to make it to vomit. Let's be fair.
Yeah,
you're stumbling.
Like, warn people out of your way while you're making your desperate dash to something, some receptacle. But he is, yes, one of the elders of the universe. Apparently, no two of which look much alike in
well,
any
thank
way.
Thank God for that.
Yeah. And I honestly always thought that he was the creation of this book.
Okay.
As was, I had thought, the kind of the purpose of Contest of Champions. And that was, I think, to pit every single, at least big bruiser Marvel character against the very another elder of the universe, as a matter of fact. None other than the Champion.
The Champion.
Also known as Trico Slatterus, who would later...
That's who I get my insurance from.
Yeah, that name would actually later be optioned by J.K. Rowling, but...
In defense of the dark arts.
It sounds like something Harry Potter would say. Trico Slatterus! And then, I don't know, like, fruit would appear.
Actually, you get to watch back episodes of Mad Men, because it sounds like you're saying John Slattery.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know that. I don't watch enough. I've never seen Mad Men, so that's a handy power to have.
Right. What's his name?
Something... There's a slight difference in the whatever it is that conjures fruit. That's why
John Hamm is my Patronus.
Oh, how you wish.
Yeah, I do.
I do as well. But, you know, I thought that the... I wish on your behalf, that is.
We can share.
I thought was almost certainly a creation of that title, that, like, two-issue limited series. It turns out that old Ndwi Gast himself first appeared in 1969, ironically in Avengers number 69.
I'm never going to get tired of you saying his name. What was his name again?
His name is Ndwi Gast.
Never going to get old.
Yes, which will now become my cosplay name. So when you come to conventions and you see like the guy that dresses as Spock in the one where they go back in time to the city on the edge of forever,
right?
I just basically, you know, do the Spock eyebrows and put on a stocking cap and a peacoat.
Can I make an official
and call it cosplay?
There's an official challenge that I wanted to make to you. Can I make it right now?
Absolutely.
I want, and if I will take whatever cosplay challenge, and I want this for all con, just at some point, okay? And if you decide to take up this challenge, you can name who you would like, within reason, because I think this is within reason, who you would like to see me appear as, okay?
Well, it's hands down, Ndwi Gast.
Well, see, I'm thinking that I would like to see you appear as the Collector from the Marvel movies.
Oh, I would love to appear as the Collector, as the Benicio del Toro spasmatic Collector.
Because I think you could pull it off. I just kick it around
I
for a while.
I have to say, though, that I was a little miffed because that little move there with the little hand, that was me.
It's you. I know.
Every time I found Star Wars figures growing up, we had that little orgasmic...
We discussed it. Actually, I've had that discussion that you can pull off the Collector, that his motions are very close to you.
Very much my own. But it turned out even the Champion was not as young a character as I thought he would. He'd actually appeared in 1982's Marvel 2-in-1 Annual number 7.
Really?
I was pretty sure he was a creation solely of the Contest of Champions thing going on there.
Can I at least state this for the record on the Contest of Champions? For all the horror that it introduced, they did include the Rangers.
Ah!
So we get to go back and revisit the Rangers with Firebird and Knight Rider. Oh. And of course, my favorite Ranger, Texas Twister.
Texas Twister, yeah, you know it. Who couldn't love Texas Twister?
So go on. I'm curious to hear why this hurt you. It
hurt me because it was one of the earliest Marvel books that I started collecting. It was about the point that I really started getting into seriously collecting something other than Star Wars.
Okay.
And then it's just like a two-issue thing. I mean, granted, they warned you up front, one of two. But it was also just, it seemed like such an excuse to let's create I may be wrong here, but I'm pretty sure this is where we first got a lot of the international heroes of the Marvel Universe. And I think it was also almost like, you know, we really don't have a lot of heroes. I mean, America has like one hero for every 312 people.
Right.
Does Israel have anybody? Does China have anybody? Does, we knew Russia had like the Vanguard and the October Guard or whatever. No, that's G.I. Joe.
Same
whatever
thing.
The hell.
Same. It's the same thing.
Same
it's just
thing.
One has a bear and one has a quote unquote bear. So it's the same idea.
But, they just sort of like, here we had all of a sudden... and perhaps this should be most insulting to Andrew of all, especially. Is,
oh, it hurts! It hurts, man.
Shamrock.
Mm.
Shamrock, the sole hero of Ireland, with like mutant luck power.
Right.
Mutant luck power.
Right. It's horrible. So, it's the most pandering BS, and all of them were like that.
Yeah, I mean, you practically needed like some guy with a big, like, you know, like Black Tom Cassidy, only he was like a hero with a, and just had, you know, shillelagh. or you know, like some guy who would like, to quote History of the World Part 1, shove a living snake up your ass. Could be like Saint Patrick.
Well, I mean, why didn't they just have her slinging around a pot of gold at people?
potential there was just.
It was horrible.
It's just kind of just this sort of silly. All of a sudden, we really don't know what's going on in other countries. Sabra or Sabra, I'm not sure how that's pronounced.
Yeah,
Sabra is how we were pronouncing it back then, so that's what I'm going to go with. the hero, the heroine, the sole superhero of Israel,
right?
And named for apparently some sort of spiny fruit that I guess is indigenous to the area.
So basically, this was before the internet. So somebody broke open like the Encyclopedia Britannica, looked up the country, like, oh, their major export is wheat. Let's call them the Thresher.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and throw them into the mix there.
Though I stand corrected, Sabre actually first appeared in Incredible Hulk 250 in 1980.
Wow.
So she was just sort of like taken out of the mothballs so that she could at least make it seem slightly less pandering years later, whenever the internet, whatever that was going to be, gets invented and people could research this. Without having to go, like, talk to somebody, breathe. But Collective Man was probably the worst because Collective Man was these brothers who were quintuplets in China.
Right.
The People's Republic apparently had tapped them for their mutant or whatever kind of ability to merge themselves into one being known as the Collective Man. But wait, there's more.
Oh.
Apparently, he could draw on the entire People's Republic.
Oh.
Like, draw on the strength. And I don't know, maybe back at home in the Dickensian sweatshops, all of a sudden production had to slow.
Right, because Collective Man needed their power. Well played. Well, this is.
I'm not sure of the dynamic. I don't know if he physically taxed the people or. Or if he just simply had some sort of spiritual link and they went on about their business, none the wiser that their sole champion at the time fighting the Hulk.
You know how they say if you had a time machine, would you go back and kill Hitler? What would you do with a time machine? What's the worst thing you could do? Like, what's the thing you could stop? For me, I would go back and stop this from being made for two reasons. Number one, because it's awful. That's number one. Number two, because it's Marvel's first limited series. It's the first thing they put out that was that was outside of the realm of like a linear ordered comic book, really, aside from annuals. Like, this is the first time they broke away and said, we're going to do a limited series. If you could have stopped that from happening, imagine what the comic book industry would have looked like now. You wouldn't have had all the problems we've discussed in our numbering issue. You wouldn't have had so many weird out-of-continuity BS happening. This would be the end. This would be the end of that. So I stand by that. If I had a time machine, I would stop this from happening.
Especially, all of those other characters notwithstanding, I had forgotten. Sorry, I had to kind of get a little choked back, a little vomit there. Arabian Knight.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Saudi Arabia's bronzed shirtless hero with his giant scimitar.
They really brought everything to bear in Contest of Champions.
God help us, his first appearance was in Incredible Hulk 257 with his magic carpet, magic sash, and magic scimitar.
But if you go through the list, like, I just wanted to see who all was in it, and find out whose first appearance it was and whose it wasn't. And this is another reason I would stop it, because this is the first appearance of Blitzkrieg, the Collective Man, Defensor, Talisman, the Peregrine, as in the Falcon.
Peregrine, yes.
Peregrine, the Peregrine Falcon. Why do I always pronounce that wrong? And Shamrock, okay? Horribly stereotypical. But the list of people... Or heroes and villains that went to the Contest of Champions is enormous. It's insane the amount of people they shoved into this issue, including Werewolf by Night. So Maybe Manshitsu makes his first appearance in Contest of Champions. I'm not sure.
Could well have. As a Shih Tzu owned by Shamrock.
Now we have an origin for Manshitsu.
And now Marvel's going to come steal it from us.
Whatever, I've got $3.75. I can buy the rights to Shamrock. I'm sure they'll give it up.
That's so true. Could buy and sell the rights with that kind of money.
So this is where it started for you. This is kind of where
that's really a good jumping off point for me. That's a place where I can stand firmly. Oh yes, Talisman of Australia with his bull roarer.
Right, with his bull roarer. You know, I never paid too much attention to this topic for a long time. It wasn't until when was it? It roughly when they decided to relaunch Marvel Knights for me. And so, I mean, it was deep in. I didn't pay much attention. I just read comics to read them. There were some art styles that I really didn't like. This is off the top of my head, but I remember there was a graphic novel called Meltdown, and it was Wolverine and Havoc Meltdown. And I could not read it because the art was too difficult to read.
Oh, gosh. I remember that, where Wolverine's hair was a yard tall.
It was basically Dale Cohn had unabashed sex with the guy, and his name is escaping me now, that did the art for 30 Days of Night, which separate, they were great. You put them together, and it becomes this bastard love child. And I'm looking it up now. I want to see.
Well,
who...
speaking of Wolverine, there was a period where the Wolverine title, the artist for the Wolverine title, was one of the most cartoony artists. But he kept getting all the serious books.
Do you remember who it was?
I do not know who it was, but I think it was Indwegast.
So Don Heck is the guy and this is kind of something I wanted to get into, okay? It was created by Arnold Drake and Don Heck. If you don't know those guys' names, it's because they really haven't done much. But it was also co-created on the back of Neil Adams.
Yeah.
I think. And I don't understand. It's a bad Meltdown book was not good, and that's the first time I really remember saying I can't get behind this because of the creative team. Like, the story wasn't horrible, but the creative team was so bad. And I think I misspoke when I said who created it, and I'm still looking for exactly who did it.
I said, you're just buying me time to figure out who the hell was that god-awful Wolverine artist.
but it was just, I couldn't get behind that art. And actually, it was written by Walt Simonson. So you would think that it wouldn't be that horrible. John Muth is the guy that did the art for it. And the reason that I know that name is because John Muth is from Cincinnati, Ohio. And he was fairly prolific, but I just can't... It was very hard for me to get behind the art on that. And that's the first time I ever remember being just so turned off by an idea of a comic being different than the way they're portrayed. Because I actually was... I was more of a fan of Havoc from the X-Factor days than I was a fan of Wolverine. I've never been a huge Wolverine fan, but it was so far afield, like trying to see it, because Havoc has those weird atomic rings of Saturn on his head at the time that were, again...
He got that, like, a mini Starhawk thing.
Yeah, but again, like you said about Wolverine's hair, they were like 5 feet tall in every panel of the comic. Like, they would get cut off.
They were channeling Legion, and speaking of places where it hurt...
Oh, God. That... Coupled only
Xavier?
By Warlock.
Oh, ow.
Yeah. But when it really hit me was during the Marvel Knights series. And I'll tell you why that hurt. Okay? it wasn't that it was bad art. It was that it was a bad story. And the story, and this is, I'm talking about Punisher Marvel Knights. And I don't know if you remember Punisher Marvel Knights. So you got the Punisher, gritty, street-level hero. I was always attracted to him as a kid. I think all young men, boys, were, because he had a gun and he shot people and he, you know, take the law into his own hands, kill the mafia kind of guy. That was an identifiable, that's the reason he existed. Well, he dies in Marvel Comics around 2000 or 99. They decide to bring him back, and all of a sudden, in all the trades, and at the time, Wizard, and in Premiere, and they're talking, oh, Punisher's coming back, and everybody's like, yeah, that's going to be awesome. The issue is Punisher comes back as an angel of vengeance sent from the Lord.
Oh, yes, I remember hearing about that.
And he has...
Maybe on this very show.
He has Archangel Michael's trench coat that you can reach into and pull any angelic weapon that you want out.
Of course you can.
And that was six issues. And then they said, this isn't working, let's turn it over to Steve Dillon. But problem is, this is Garth Ennis writing this book. And I like Garth Ennis's work. I really do. But this was so far afield from what Punisher ever was. I was like, why is this happening? Why is Garth Ennis doing this? So that was my first...
Why is this even...
Yeah, why does this exist? So that was my first... Because it was like, you know, it's goofy to do, what if Punisher killed the Marvel Universe? What if Punisher's family lived? What if this? What if that? You know, at one point, Punisher got turned into a black dude. Okay, fine. But this was Punisher as an angel of the Lord come back, and he can reach into his coat and pull out any gun he wants. And they're all shiny and neon. Like, ooh, and he has an angelic mark on his head and his eyes glow. Like, this is not Punisher. So, for me, that was my entree into what the hell is this comic book creator doing?
Yeah.
Because those were, when they relaunched Marvel Knights, those were, with some small editorial mandate, those were creator-driven comic books. Because Kevin Smith did Daredevil, Garth Ennis did this. And keep in mind, Garth Ennis was coming off of, what, Preacher at this time?
Yeah.
Is that right? So that's where that's coming from. All right, I'm done with my rant now. That's where I started. It was with the Punisher. I'm sorry. I'm back now.
Never could quite glean who we were looking for here. But you did, you know, just speaking of Marvel and some travesties that came down the line, I'm surprised this didn't occur to me back on the first of this story arc. Marvel Zombies.
Ooh. Okay.
Because to me, what Marvel Zombies says is, we don't care. We really don't give a flying handshake about anything. We know what you will buy. And what people are buying right now is the hell out of zombies.
Right.
So let's put two things together that we know have worked for us. Marvel, because, you know, we're Marvel.
Right.
And zombies, because zombies. And it just basically says, we don't really care to, you know, create a compelling product because we heard tell that zombies are the flavor of the year.
Right. And it wasn't great. I'll just be completely honest. The art was kind of off-putting, which, granted, you're doing a book about zombies. Maybe the art should be a little off-putting. But... There got to some points where it was nigh unreadable because of that art.
Yeah.
So, Cole, what is the worst for you? Like, if you had to pick one and say, this is, besides your first, let's not talk about your creator disappointment virginity, your cherry popping, like I was with Marvel Knights, but what was the worst for you? What's the thing you look at and say, this is the one, this is where everything went bad.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think for me, one of the most, not necessarily to dodge the question, but to take a different look at what you're seeking here. One of the things that really went bad for me was there was a period, you know, I really got into comics in the 80s, in the early 80s.
Right.
And somewhere between the, you know, mid to late 80s and early 90s, there was a term that began to crop up here and there that had never existed before that I was aware of.
Right.
And you would see it and cringe because it always was a portent of doom. And that term was two simple words, experimental style. And the first, because I wasn't collecting, but I was following through Steve, mentioned in the previous episode, who was a longtime collector of Legion of Superheroes. And I was following the Legion of Superheroes, and I really liked Keith Giffen's art style. This was back in the days of, the Great Darkness Saga, where Darkseid finally reappears in the 3000th century or whatever the hell time it takes place.
Right.
But, Steve's going to hate me for this. Just like he hates me for Matter Eater Lad.
Matter Eater Lad.
And you notice we left Matter Eater Lad off of the worst.
Because he's not the worst?
Because he's not as bad as Blue Snowman.
He's not.
Or the parrot, who I didn't think about. I actually
saw
the Captain America cover where he fought a character called the parrot, who had some lovely ladies locked up in big bird cages.
You know who else we left off? Purposefully? Turner D. Mohan Century, because that character is
Turner
awesome.
Turner D. Century, yes. Turner D. Century is right up there with the DC character King Faraday. As far as highly derivative names.
Right.
But, the experimental style, Keith Giffen was the first one to announce, I'm going to have an experimental style. I'm going to adopt an experimental style. And what that meant was, he went from, I guess he just stopped using the whatever muscles. Those of you who are, students of anatomy and physiology may have a better understanding of what I'm going at if you're doing your gross anatomy classes for your pre-med or your med school. You probably know exactly which muscles in the wrist stopped being used. They just atrophied completely because he stopped having any kind of line form or any kind of sense of anything in his art. And it was like it had become deflated. If you look at the pre-experimental style and the post-experimental style, it's like someone let half the air out of an air mattress that was shaped like Cosmic Boy.
I love how mad this makes you, by the way. I just love it. I love it. I love listening to you talk about this.
And then it got worse because I didn't have a vested interest. It was annoying. It was unfortunate. But then the worst occurred because one of the books that got me really going in comics on the Marvel side of the fence was X-Men during the John Byrne, Chris Claremont years. And John Byrne was just like, until I discovered George Perez, was like the finest artist. He was the Da Vinci, the entire Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle name pantheon of comic book art, as far as I was concerned, until he announced, I'm going to jump on this experimental style bandwagon. And it was the same sort of thing. It was more like if you left his art out in the rain.
Someone left
for a couple of months
out in the rain.
Then you remembered, oh my God, we left John Byrne in the backyard. And then you go out there and it's just sort of, it's misshapen. And it's got that kind of, Dutch, Pennsylvania Dutch shrunken apple head doll thing going on. It just stopped working. And in all fairness, I did find out it was actually a combination of this, and I think Terry Austin was no longer inking him, because I'm told Byrne has gone on record to say that his art was never as good as when Terry Austin inked him.
Right.
And in fact, that is very true if you look at some of the stuff that Austin didn't ink. But still, experimental style, to me, just meant I decided at this stage of my career to be lazy, because you will buy my name.
And that always has bugged you, though. And you know what?
It really has. And the other thing that bugs me is when artists are so lazy that they will change a character so they don't have to draw that much of them. Like, hey, let's make the thing go back to, like, when he first appeared. Because you're lazy and you don't draw the damn rocks like Kirby did. You miserable piece of crap.
You mean Frank Miller syndrome. Show me on the Black Widow character where they hurt you.
That's it exactly. It's because of You know, Black Widow's beautiful, you know, Peg Bundy rolling locks get disappeared to a Demi Moore in whatever the hell army movie she was in.
I can't stop laughing at this. This is so good. Just how mad you get.
This is the portion of our show where we only have one host.
And I love it. I can just laugh for days.
Jedi Cole's bitter old man comic.
Because how many times have we on and off air had this conversation? Because I'm about to go into mine.
Absolutely.
As well, yes. And when you're done. And
you knew well that swimming around in my head were images of Black Widow in not only her, like, butch crop haircut, but also, I mean, her costume was not exactly visually complex, right? But he just went to the very simple gray leotard with a little spidey on the breast.
I can't be happier.
I mean, I was surprised that Daredevil retained his horns under Frank Miller's watch, because good God, that could take upwards of a second to draw. The prosecution rests.
Oh, see, mine is different, and there is a conversation that you and I have had. Would you care to guess what my biggest issue in this realm is?
Wow. I mean, I know you're still singing from Major Force, but I know there are also other...
Well, Major Force was bad. That was awful. But for me, the worst instance of this is a man, and you spoke to it earlier. You're going to buy it because of my name, right?
Oh, yes.
There is a man in the comic book industry that 70% of the time is nail on the head. Just every time, does the most amazing work. 30% of the time, literally phones it in. If there was a way for him to talk on the phone and have a robot draw, that's what this guy does.
Get like one of those auto pens or something that the celebrities use to sign 20 autographs at once.
And I'm about to piss off some serious fanboys, but this guy's name is Alex Ross.
I will have to say I agree with you there. I think that I would wager to say that he's been in an experimental style phase for
because
the last 10 or 15 years, because there's just...
If you crack open Kingdom Come, it's amazing. Beautiful. Gorgeous. If you look at the limited run Justice...
Yeah, by Justice, though... If you look at Kingdom Come, if you look at Marvels, here is an artist at the height of his powers.
Right.
But once you start to get to Justice, and especially after Justice...
Dynamite. The stuff that he started doing for Dynamite.
Yeah, the stuff he did for Dynamite. Then you start to see an artist at the height of his name.
Exactly. But then he'll come back and do a cover. I think the issue is time. I think some of it has to be time.
Because absolutely.
His art style does not lend itself to a monthly... book. So why does he do it? He knows people are going to buy it. He knows he gets top dollar for doing whatever. So why does he do a monthly book? It has be money. It has to be money.
It's time and passion. I mean, you also look, there's also kind of the, Joe Jusco, and before people go, oh my God, what are you talking about? I'm naming a syndrome here. Especially Adam Hughes. It's kind of the Adam Hughes syndrome.
Right.
Or the, who am I thinking of? There's one other artist who, I mean, they used to just do this amazing Dynamite stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got so popular that they had zero time anymore. And they probably make as much money or more churning out about 100 covers a year and doing nothing else.
Right. Right. Exactly. And
who am I thinking of? Art Adams.
Art Adams. Absolutely Art Adams. It's...
Yeah. You know, have you seen Art Adams do a damn book in the last 15 years? Hell no. But you saw a crap ton of Art Adams covers.
That's right. And that's, I mean, and that's what...
And I think that's where... Go ahead.
No. Keep going. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
But yeah, that's where Alex Ross is now. He has hit that Art Adams. He's hit that Adam Hughes point where... You know, if you want to see the best possible Alex Ross from the last 5 or 10 years, go look for covers and poster images.
Yep, absolutely.
If you want to see him at his worst, look for him on a monthly.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, so here's my Art Adams, right? I'm now went back and I picked up, I didn't pick it up. I took it off a bookshelf because I was out of books to read. So I started reading X-Men Asgardian Wars, which we had talked about on the show, yes. but it piqued my interest. So I went back to read it. And the Art Adams' art at that period of time was nothing short of stellar in the late 80s. Oh,
he almost made me forgive the Mohawk Storm.
It's just stylized and detailed enough. You know, it's like the crust on a creme brulee. Like, you know what I mean? It's just perfect. And then you go look at anything he did in the 90s. And you're like, what the hell happened? It's because he didn't have time. And there's an XY graph, right? For it's money, pride, time versus talent. And yeah. And at some point you've got to be able to say my pride is getting in the way of the quality of my work, or the amount of money I'm making is getting in the way of the quality of my work. Well, unless you're going to retire on
Look,
it.
You get some of these guys who are just like the top of their game, some of the best, genuinely best artists out there.
Right.
I'm not talking solely popularity. They're just damn good artists. And then noble rot sets in late into their career.
Mm-hmm. Pride comes before the fall, my friend. And that's what we've seen happen. One person I do want to speak to on that note that I think gets a little bit of a bad rap. I know we've talked about not defending people, but there's a guy that I need to defend, and that is Greg Land. You can give Greg Land the biggest rash of shit you want for all of his cheesecake covers and all of his butt-out bikini pose, whatever you want. Fine. Fine. You hired him to do that for those. You're guilty. You're guilty, not him. Because if you pick up, there's a book, and we talked about it at our last recommended reading, called Sojourn, which was a monthly title under CrossGen. And his art is phenomenal. It's a little cheesecakey, but it's stylized enough to pull off a medieval thing. And if you let him do a monthly book like that, he does a great job. You are enabling Greg Land to put butts in bikinis and show them to your face. I don't want to hear it. That's okay.
But see, at that point, you know, you're talking about a different kind of pandering, that different species of the same animal that Marvel Zombies was. And that's, of course, Marvel Sex.
Marvel.
A great example of that were the various Marvel swimsuit issues.
Oh, the Jim Lees.
Which, you know, you bought them because it was like the Sports Illustrated swimsuit of comics. And then you get to a point in your life where you're starting to mellow as a male of the human race. And realize that was the stupidest thing. I mean, that's even stupider than buying the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. Or Land's End or whoever sending GQ issues out to people for free.
Right.
But, you know, just the worst kind of just, you know, we're going to put this out there because the fanboys are going to eat it up. But, you know, I want to talk a bit about some other folks that hurt me.
Okay.
And I think the biggest offender, the J. Jonah Jameson of comics.
Oh, no.
Was one, and his name came up, was invoked in the first, when we started this arc.
Okay.
When we started with our astonishing fails.
No.
Another.
By the way, nobody's safe. Everybody's got a target on him for us, this story arc. So
no more than, none other than the beanpole who edits.
Oh, God.
Marvel editor-in-chief Jim Shooter.
Oh,
who repeatedly hurt me from Secret Wars.
Old Nose Candy himself.
Yes, indeed. To the derailing.
Oh, Jim.
Or the attempted derailing of a book that I fell into and fell in love with and started reading backward and forward just voraciously. In what became close to the tail end of its run, and that was the Master of Kung Fu, Deadly Hands of Shang-Chi.
Oh.
Master of Kung Fu, or Shang-Chi, as I called him back then, because I thought he was a latte. Rumor had it, or the word was, that apparently this book surviving, thriving, despite all odds, despite the fact that the 60s Bruce Lee fad had long since died.
Yeah.
And this book had evolved out of that anyway and becomes, and was just, I mean, it was getting to the point where it was just the stories under Doug Monk and with the Gene Day artwork were phenomenal.
Right.
And then Jim Shooter comes along and says, look, guys, you know what's selling right now? You know what's hot, what people want right now? Ninjas.
Oh, the ninja craze. Damn it.
So either your principal character is going to have to be killed off, or he's going to have to become a ninja. I don't know. I kind of, my fanciful notional idea is that someone tried to point out to Shooter that ninjas are Japanese.
Oh.
And Kung Fu and Shang-Chi and Fu Manchu and the whole damned thing was Chinese. Asia actually encompasses a vastly variety of different peoples beyond just ninjas. And, had Shang-Chi been Laotian, it still would have been inapplicable to make him a ninja. But, there it was. The damage was done, and they just decided to pull up stakes. And, no sooner was it announced that the series was going to be winding down than Gene Day hauled off and died on me.
Oh.
And I, to this day, not as vehemently, but I do still to this day blame Jim Shooter for
death.
Gene Day's death.
Oh, jeez.
But, I don't think he's the only one to blame for it. Everything that has gone wrong. Joe Quesada, I think, in my personal opinion, has proven that once you get in that hot seat, you get stupid.
Well, there's a lot of, and that's sort of what I wanted. There's a lot of, and it's, I guess it's kind of gotten better, but I don't know whether I'm looking at it through a different lens, but it's kind of gotten different now, but there's an editorial mandate that's been informed, because keep in mind, we talk about all this stuff, and we brought it up on the show before, but it's business. So
yeah.
You've got to do, now there's a smart way to do business and a dumb way to do business. We all know that. But Quesada was better than Shooter, that's for sure.
From the business standpoint, much better.
Right.
He recognized the importance of zombies over ninjas.
Over ninjas. It's true. Now, I'm sorry. Are you done hating Jim Shooter for
vocally? I'm done hating Jim Shooter. I got one more little hate rant on a specific title.
Okay, go ahead and do that.
Great characters were just butchered.
Go ahead and do that, because I want to end on a different note. So
okay.
Go ahead and do that.
Here's one of my biggest miseries, and thankfully I was long out of the comic, because its very creator did enough to undermine it on his own. So it has a storied history. It got an entire issue of Hey Kids Comics a year and a half ago or longer. Okay. I'm talking about Alpha Flight.
Oh, okay.
And right. Alpha Flight has a strange place in my heart, because I love the concept, because it was like Contest of Champions without having to suggest that an entire continent can get by or an entire country can get by on one guy. So, the idea that at least Canada had a team,
right,
was very appealing. And, they had their origins in X-Men. They were tied to Wolverine, who was the Deadpool of his day, only a worthwhile character. the thing about it was, okay, like I say, Byrne himself repeatedly, he was like some sort of morose teenager who hates himself, because he was constantly cutting the making little nicks in the arm that was Alpha Flight.
Right. Death by a thousand cuts.
Yeah, by doing, like, stupid things, like, the characters that his wife suggested. I'm like, good God, John, that's what got us Goody Two Shoes and The Thing. But that's what got us characters like Gilded Lily and the one of the worst, Deadly Earnest.
Deadly
Earnest. Solely so he could do a story called The Importance of Being Deadly. In his wilder days, if you will.
Right.
Let's digest that a second. But, you know, the thing that it was that after Byrne left, and Byrne, you know, ruined one of his best characters by himself by suddenly deciding that Aurora needed to go crazy and get herself an experimental style haircut, and apparently also spontaneously change into a whole different costume out of nowhere.
Right.
I mean, the montage sequence where Spider-Man in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, where you go from a bunch of, you know, pen and ink and colored pencil drawings, you know, from your school supplies to suddenly having a multi-million dollar costume made more sense than her just suddenly showing up in yellow and white.
Right.
With her stupid punk hairstyle. But, you know, after Byrne left and after all the stupid things he did, he ruined Marina, he ruined Aurora, he had, I remember reading an article about some of his plans, he had this really cool character that he ultimately did nothing with, that I would have done a different, taken a different approach.
Right.
But they didn't ask. But after he left, I think it was it Bill Mantlow?
It was Mantlow, yeah.
Yes, it was Bill Mantlow who decided he wanted to be the harbinger of Joe Quesada, and brought along concepts like, oh no, Aurora and Northstar, who've long since been established as mutants. They're not mutants at all.
Oh, this hurts so bad.
They're fairies.
Oh.
No, that doesn't mean homosexual. It means they're fairies, like in the kind of way that little girls do paper cutouts with butterfly wings and fool Sir Arthur Conan Doyle into thinking they were photographed with real fairy people from the land of JoJo or whatever. You know, it's like the mythical,
yes,
fairies. Like the chick from Wizards with the big jugs. And then to add insult to injury, they took one of the best, most unique, most developed, interesting characters in Marvel's history, and that would be none other than Puck.
Yes.
Who was effectively an ordinary guy, except that he was a little person, which, you know, didn't have all the advantages of quote-unquote ordinary guy. And because of the condition that made him a little person, he was also suffering from excruciating pain that he meditated and had different techniques to control. But he also built himself up to the ultimate human potential for someone in that state.
Yes.
And apparently he used to be a boxer and a wrestler, and you know, he was like the Batman without the really mucking about with doing a lot of detecting or having a utility belt. But right. He could, like, you know, he was like the mini-me Jack Reacher.
Brilliant! Make the movie!
So, and then all of a sudden, Mantlow decides, oh no, no, we cannot have a normal person in this book. The Marvel Universe cannot abide a normal person anymore than, and this is a throwback way back to one of our early episodes, any more than the DC Universe can allow masturbation. All of a sudden, he has to be like this, some sort of ancient Arabic, you know,
genie,
1001 Nights, Aladdin, mystical character who's been cursed into a tiny body.
How insulting is that, by the way?
Yeah.
To people of small stature.
Yeah, exactly. It is as if to say the only way you got small was apparently in your past life, you were cursed.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like the line from Being John Malkovich, you know, there'd be one place on God's earth where you and your accursed kind can work in peace.
Oh.
So that is their end of my rant for this particular issue, because those were the ones that are closest to the surface.
I want to close on this because we're almost out of time. So I wanted to close on one thing, and that one thing is, we've talked about people and creators who went through an experimental phase that didn't have time, that were good artists that just didn't have time. We haven't even talked about Image yet. You can draw your own conclusion from Rob Liefeld in the image days. We aren't even going to get into that in this one.
Why bother?
Why bother? You know, people that just started bad, people that ended bad. There's one type of creator that I almost envy in what they can do in a horrible nature, and that is the type of creator that does it just because he can. And none other, it's so typified by Stan Lee. yeah, Stan Lee. Keep in mind, guys, you've forgotten that Stan Lee was the creator of Stripperella.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that came to mind and I forgot it like 2 weeks ago.
Stan Lee's Just Imagine, where Stan Lee, and I've heard a lot of stories about how this came into being, whether it was a screw you to Marvel, whether he'd always wanted to do it, because he did this not because, you know, he didn't have time, and he didn't do it for the money, and he didn't do it for the stature. He just did it because he could. So he took all of the DC characters he never got to touch, because he's worked for Marvel his entire life, and recreated all of them. And I'll just be completely honest with you, 99% of what he did was pretty awful. I'm just putting it out there.
As you say, he recreated all of them, at which point you have to add poorly.
Just everything from...
like Randall and Clerks. He recreated all of them poorly.
And he almost did it just to be contrary. Like, everybody was the opposite of what they were in the DC universe up to that point. You know, like, Batman was a black dude. You know, like, it just Wonder Woman was weird. Green Lantern Green Lantern was Norse, I believe, created out of a Norse figure. Flash was a lady. Robin was an assassin that was trained to go kill Batman. Like, it just everything that you can think of is so backwards and strange and weird. The Aquaman had nothing to do with the Aquaman. He was a marine biologist who decided to see if he could test himself scientifically to breathe underwater. Like, it's just anything he could do to kind of, like, pew-pew the middle finger at whoever he wanted, because it didn't matter what he did. He's Stan Lee. What's somebody going to tell him? It's bad?
Yeah.
You know, what's somebody gonna be like, going to be like, this sucks? Just go do what you're going to do. People will buy it because of your name, and nobody cares, and you don't care, so go do it. I'm Stan Lee. Middle fingers everywhere. Like, just making it rain. Just whatever. Like, so I almost...
See this? I call it Excelsior.
That's almost a level of irresponsibility with your craft that I appreciate. You know, it'd be like going to a Gordon Ramsay restaurant and he serves you a hot dog and flips you off and walks out because he can. You're going to pay $25 for this hot dog, middle finger, walk out.
Yeah, and you just saw him crossing the street from the 7-Eleven with a giant sack full of Big Bites.
That's right.
And he just puts it on his plate, does a little, you know, filigree with some kind of sauce. And there you go, $20.
That's right.
You just paid $1.59 across the street, you little creep.
It's like you went to Colt, the guy Colt, the arms maker Colt, or Winchester, or John Winchester, and said, you got a time machine, and you went back and you said, I need a Winchester rifle made by you, created with love and passion, and he makes you a rubber band gun, flips you off, and he kicks you back in your time machine. like F you, city, and kicks you back in your time machine, and there you go. It was so amazingly bad that it was amazing. Like, that he got away with it was like a crime. It was like watching Ocean's 11. Like, that this happened was the crime of the century, and you couldn't stop watching it. It was so great. It's like watching OJ drive in a white Bronco in slow motion. And just watching it on the news, being like, this is happening for real. I can't even be mad about it. So I would like, do you have anything else to add to that?
I don't think I can follow that. That's the best appraisal of Just Imagine.
Thank you. And you had the best appraisal of Alpha Flight, which I knew we were going to get there at some point because you hate it so much. I don't even know how you...
I mean, I went into Alpha Flight when it was first announced that it was getting its own title. Ready to wow. just love the living hell out of it. And it so often tried so hard to make me hate it. And I still... wanted
I
to
dated
love
her.
It.
I dated her and, at some point.
Yeah, and then finally I had to say goodbye, and then it got worse. It's like you hear, hey, did you hear about Janine? What? And it was like, right. Oh my God, I got out just in time.
She knocked over a liquor store. What?
Yeah. She, I mean, I the potential was always there, but I never, damn.
Never thought she'd actually go through with it.
Yeah.
She's in Al Qaeda now. What?
Yeah. How the hell? you know, it just ceased to be anything.
Okay. All right. Time is up. I'm calling this issue. It's a hell of an issue. It was more fun than I should have had. Talk about things I hate.
Janine's everywhere.
Exactly.
The name.
Clean up your act, Janine's everywhere. You're going to end up with three-fourths of a cover of an Alpha Flight cover with a fist yelling, I'm gay. Yeah, yeah. There's a throwback joke. So, that was this show, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, it was.
Thank you for listening to that. Cole and I feel cleansed now.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, my God. So, Cole, what's next week?
Skin underneath.
Oh, it's like a pumice rub just happened to my soul.
Oh, wow.
What's next week's episode, Cole?
Next week, we're still out there with the challenge of the super fails, and we're going to talk about defective comics.
Oh, God, I can't wait for this.
And in a way, perhaps some of this would have fit there, but we're going to talk about things like the parody glut, bad spinoffs, bad revivals, you know, some more things that kind of hurt us, more things that were just poorly thought out. There's a couple. There's a series from DC that is so obscure.
Oh, no.
My guess is 1 in 200 people listening to the show might even have an idea what I'm talking about. But it was going to be a big deal, and then it became a lot of nothing. I don't think it went past 2 issues.
Really? Save it. Save it. I don't want to know
yes.
until...
That's your little teaser for
next time.
That's right.
Well, Cole, thank you. And thank you for 103 issues of Hey Kids Comics now. I could not be more thankful that you've joined me on this journey.
It has been an amazing journey. This particular road that we've taken.
Right.
It's a little off the beaten path. It's having to literally just sort of machete our way through, but it's definitely been worth it.
Just everything, the playground, the shows, the inroads you're making for us, and we really appreciate it as members of the JCU family. So thank you so much from the bottom
Absolutely.
Of my heart. And thank you so much for giving me a chance to bitch about all the things that I love.
This has been the best. And of course, you can catch us again in a week for even more Challenge of the Super Fails. As you know, we'll be here at the Jedi Cole Universe, JediCole.com. You can check out, you can actually, one of the things I often forget is occasionally I'll tweet on Twitter. At the Jedi Cole U on Twitter. You can write to us, please write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. We would love to hear from you. We'd love to be part of it, especially if you want to be part of the new live show.
Right.
Or just get some more info or figure out what we're talking about there. And special thanks to our friends in Ecuador who've been dialing out the Jedi Cole Universe. I don't know if you're listening to this show or other shows or looking at the feature articles, but we were getting some page hits from
nice.
Ecuador.
So. I'm a little pissed at Liechtenstein right now. Guys, let's get off your ass.
There?
Let's get off your ass. Let's bring it up.
You know, Andorra has yet to appear on the stats. So. I want to put that out there for that tiny little European nation. We do want to hear from you. You can check out, if you're a little closer to home for me in Texas, if you'd like to check out conventions in the state of Texas, go to Convention Awareness Project Texas at conventionawareness.blogspot.com. And you can find myself and Mr. Eddie Medina, and a little later on, myself and our very own Andrew Farmer, over at deepelmonair.com. Eddie and I have the Rancor Pit live every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. And Andrew and I will soon have our monthly Hey Kids Comics Live on the second Saturday of every month from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m.
He's a hell of a producer, ladies and gentlemen. All that going on. Plus, he still bakes. He still finds time for love.
He still finds time for love. I make little. I go and buy the little Pillsbury biscuits and shape them into the shape of the Pillsbury Doughboy and then bake them.
He bakes
and serve them to children with a butter knife in their heart.
That's right. All right, join us next week for Challenge of the Superfiles Defective Comics.